Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. As always, oh yeah, here we are, friends, in the middle of August in New Orleans. And what does that mean? Hot. It means hot. And it means wet, but mostly hot. Well, I guess they're kind of one and the same, right? That wet, humid heat. One of my favorite things is I wake up in the morning, look at my phone, and the weather app that I have on my phone, I actually have more than one, but one I get alerts from, and it actually says heat advisory. And I say, thanks, Sherlock, for letting me know heat advisory. Is it somehow different than what it's going to be tomorrow and what it was yesterday? I don't think so. But I guess I need that reinforcement to remind me that it is indeed hot. And I guess if you don't go outside, then maybe it's a good thing to get those advisories just to remind you as to why you should stay inside. But anyway, yeah, I know that's not quite possible, nor is it quite desirable. Drink a lot of fluids, friends. Be smart. Be weather aware, as they say on one of the local news channels. I read a really funny meme, actually, since we're on the topic on Facebook the other day. It said, what's it like to live in New Orleans this time of year? Take a shower. Don't dry off, get dressed, go outside. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much spot on. Hey, friends, we got a really good show coming up for you here today. Another installment of our sustainability series. If you've been listening to the show, you know we are doing shows from time to time connected to issues that are sit in the broader world of sustainability. That can be environmental stuff, that can be social justice stuff, cultural preservation stuff. Pretty wide stance there. Health and wellness stuff, for example. That'll be our show next week, by the way. We're going to be talking to our friends from Healthy Hospitality. I want to mention that real quick, talking about health and wellness in the hospitality, liquor, spirits industry. They're a great organization, fairly new, that started up in the UK, now operates here in the US, trying to support the concepts of health and wellness for our friends in the hospitality industry. This show, friends, coming up today, very, very important show. We're discussing LGBTQ issues in the industry. Based on a seminar, we did several of our shows, three, four of the shows that we taped at Tales of the Cocktail. That's where we taped this one. We're based on some of the seminars. We partnered up with them to identify certain seminars that we wanted to do shows on that would fit in our sustainability series. This is one of those. The seminar in question was called The Queer Community Revealed, Turning Allies into Advocates. It was moderated by Christina Cabrera, who joins us. She is the brand ambassador for Grey Goose Vodka in New York City, and we are also joined by Whit Kathner, and Whit is the National Sales Director for Republic Restorative Distillery out of Washington, D.C. Two great guests, two great people. Got a chance to hang out with them a little bit after their seminar, which was the day after we taped the show. By all accounts, the seminar went fantastically. Congratulations to them. Christina did a great job putting it together, and it was a real privilege and honor, as well as just a great amount of fun to hang out with both of them after and do a celebratory shot after their successful seminar. So that was really cool. But this is a fascinating show, friends. I hope you get something from it. The idea here in our sustainability series is to get you to think about things that, you know, maybe you do already know. So we're reinforcing things and providing you more information, more insight. Or perhaps these are things that you just haven't thought about yet. And hopefully this show is an example. Maybe it's a little bit of both, but we want you to think about these things. We want you to challenge yourself. I know it challenges me, which is one of the reasons why I really wanted to do it. Christina and Whit taught me a ton. And that's one of the reasons why I like to do the sustainability series, is it's an opportunity for me to learn and to try and grow and get better as a human, which I would hope that we all want to do. And I hope that you find something good in this show to help you along that journey as well. Friends, a quick note. Wanted to note the passing of two people in our local community here. Nancy Parker, the news anchor from WVUE, the Fox affiliate local news station here in New Orleans. By all accounts, I didn't know her, but by all accounts, a great person and a really important member of our society here, a caring and nurturing person. So our condolences go out to her family, her friends, her viewers, everybody in the journalism community that knows her or doesn't know her, and everybody that listened to her for the number of years that she was on the station. Also wanted to note the passing of former Governor Kathleen Blanco, who passed away also over the weekend, and sadly from cancer. Governor Blanco was, of course, the governor here during Hurricane Katrina. And I hope as time goes on that that's not necessarily the entirety of her legacy. Certainly an educator, an advocate for education, really, I think, an advocate for a lot of people. A lot of people were very critical of her and her administration after the recovery from Katrina. I think some of it may be justified, but I think a lot of it not so justified. But again, condolences to that family and her friends as well. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show, and then we'll be back with our featured interview coming to you from Two Jags, talking about LGBTQ issues in the hospitality and liquor industry. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WPSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks, friends, for listening into the show this week. As always, part of our sustainability series here connected to Tales of the Cocktail 2019, and a very good show here for you today, a very important show for you here today. We're talking about LGBTQ issues in the service and hospitality industry, and I'm joined by two fantastic guests on the subject, Christina Cabrera. Christina, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, great. Good to meet you in person. We talked on the phone not too long ago, and nice to put a face to a name.
Yeah, likewise, likewise. I'm glad
so
to be
much.
Here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Fantastic. And Whit Kathner, Whit, how are you?
Doing very well. Happy to be at Tales.
Hey, excellent. Have you been to Tales before?
This is my first time at Tales.
Oh, okay.
I know.
A noob. Okay.
It's all right. It's breaking me in pretty well. Feel good. I was up early this morning, Cafe Dumont, so I'm ready to do it.
Yeah, and we're here. Technically, people out there listening are hearing this after Tales is over, but we're really only in, where are we at, day two? Yeah.
Officially, I've been here since Monday, but officially it's been going on for 2 days.
And you've been to a handful.
This is my seventh Tales.
Seventh Tales. Okay,
yes.
About the same as me, somewhere
yes.
in that number. Okay, gotcha. Really cool. And so thanks to them for helping us coordinate these shows based on seminars that we're doing. And I want to give a shout out here to Two Jags Restaurant, who's kind enough to host us here today. Second oldest restaurant in New Orleans, 1856. Whit, do me a favor. Tell us a little bit about your background in the industry, what you do, why you live in Washington, D.C.
Well, my time in the industry has been comparatively short. I joined the industry when two of my closest friends were opening one of the only women-owned and operated whiskey distilleries in the country. And before that, I had spent about 8 years in politics and community organizing. So I got my start on the 2008 Obama campaign in New Hampshire.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Kind of caught the campaign bug, love working under intense deadlines. Election day is a heck of a deadline. So I always loved doing that, managed some political races, and then did community organizing down in D.C. and around the country. But really wanted to kind of explore my passion for food and beverage. And when my two best friends were doing that, it seemed like the perfect opportunity.
You didn't have a tough interview then? It sounds...
I had 4 interviews.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I had to sell my completely unrelated resume into this job. But after 4 interviews, they were like, all right, you're continuing to come back, so we'll do it. So they took a chance on me, honestly.
Okay.
And I was very humbled by that. And what an incredible community to step into. The industry is just so welcoming, and I feel a lot of camaraderie with the long hours and incredibly hard work that has to go in every day. And I think it's been a really lovely transition. But, man, it's been a heck of a learning curve in the past couple of years.
Awesome. Yeah. Fantastic. How about you, Christina?
So I'm the Grey Goose Ambassador for New York City now. But before then, I was in San Francisco for 11 years. I actually originally moved to San Francisco to be a chef. I went to the CIA, Culinary Institute of America, in St. Helena.
Mm-hmm.
And very kind of organically and just kind of started moving into, you know, the bar role. And I became a bartender. I loved cooking. I still love it. It's my passion, but I miss the social aspect that bartending, you know, mm-hmm. gives you, and getting to know people and, you know, just, you know, sitting, you know, standing across from someone at a bar and just, you know, making their day, you know, having a conversation. And so I kind of made it my career. I started at 15 Romolo back in San Francisco, and I worked my way up, and I, you know, worked as hard as I could to become, you know, one of the best there. And, you know, once that happened, Bacardi took an interest in me, and I started doing a lot of brand trips. They started flying me all over the country to represent them. And they created this Grey Goose program, this advocacy program, and they thought I'd be a good fit for it. So they moved me to New York, and I've been there ever since.
Yeah, and you were saying that you helped them establish the program in a way of defining what it should be, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, I feel, you know, they hired me for a reason, you know. As an ambassador, you know, you're supposed to represent the brand. But I think because I'm, you know, a person of color and also a woman and, you know, LGBTQ, I think, you know, they hired me to bring that perspective in without knowing so. And what I started to do is, you know, in New York, I slowly, you know, kind of took on the role of working more and more with the multicultural and LGBTQ community. These are two demographics that I think are often left out of the conversation, but two demographics that still drink. And, you know, our culture is becoming mainstream, you know, and has been over the past few years. And so I think, you know, being part of both of those communities, you know, I could help Grey Goose, you know, set itself in a very organic way.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
What attracted you to getting involved in this? Tell me the title of the seminar. I apologize. I've forgotten.
So the title of the seminar is The Queer Community Revealed, Turning Allies into Advocates.
Beautiful. Thank you. So what attracted you to want to get involved and be a part of the panel?
I mean, I think that this is a really unique moment in history for our country, and I think that Tales is reflecting that by having this, the first LGBTQ-themed panel in Tales history, happened in 2019, not a moment too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt like this is an opportunity that I definitely wanted to jump at, and for myself as a queer trans man, I think that it's extremely important that I'm out there and visible.
Mm-hmm.
I get a huge amount of privilege that I get to walk around in the streets of America presenting as a straight, white, cisgendered male, when actually I'm part of one of the most marginalized communities in the world. And so the opportunity to really stand there in my truth and be able to share what some of my lived experience is like in the industry and outside of it, I think that it's an important thing for people to be exposed to, because they're just not aware that that life experience is mm-hmm. taking place around them all the time.
All the time.
Many
right.
people would meet me and know me and be like, oh, I've never met a trans person in my life. Actually,
facts. Facts, ladies and gentlemen, facts.
That's great, right? Okay. So, we'll get in. We got a whole bunch of time to get into stuff here, but with the seminar, let's talk a little bit. Let's just kind of start with the title, "Turning Allies into Advocates," and let's define what those two things mean. And I know it's kind of a big question, but what it means and how does that happen?
Sure. I mean, one of my very good friends kind of helped me come up with the title. I was kind of struggling with it a little bit because it needed to be something that was going to catch people's attention. More importantly, the heterosexual community, because that's what this seminar is for. I mean, it's to, you know, educate and to, you know, bring them into our world, share our history and our lives with them. So, you know, for me, what allies mean... Allies are the people that support you. You know, they respect you and they accept you as you are. You know, they will go to the parades. They will, you know, go to the, you know, gay bars. They'll, you know, they'll be part of your world. Advocates are the people who fight for you. They fight with you. You know, they go to the marches. You know, they don't go to a certain establishment because that establishment gives to, you know, anti-LGBTQ, you know, establishments or, you know, organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
mm-hmm.
how you're an advocate. You don't, you know, an advocate means not only do you support your friend because and accept them as who they are, but you fight for who they are. And you support them, you know, in your everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, you know, in this industry, I found that I have more allies than in any other industry. You know, it's, you know, being queer and being part of the LGBTQ community within the cocktail industry is, it's a little easier than other industries, but there's still, you know, there's still a sense of, well, I support you. I mean, I accept you. Yeah, but we need more than that. If we're going to have true change and things are going to really change for us, we're going to turn that tide. You know, we need you on the sidelines with us, in the trenches with us, standing up for us.
Mm-hmm.
So
great. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for explaining the difference. Yeah. I think a lot of people
I hope I did
not
a good job of that.
Yeah. Do you want to add to that, Whit?
I would second everything that you said. And the other piece that resonates for me, I did two theses in school, and the first one that I did was living in the Netherlands, and it was on acceptance versus tolerance and the discourse around trans men in the Netherlands. And there's a really big difference between tolerance and acceptance. And I think this is taking the additional step of being an advocate, of proactive action, right? So tolerance is like, I see you there. Got it. I can put up and exist in the same space with you. And like, you try to do your thing, I'll do my thing. And then acceptance is like, oh, I'm actually going to take your worldview into account, like when you're not here and not in the room. And I want to ensure that you have a seat at the table. But the advocacy is like, even if you're not here, even if you're not in the room, I'm going to make sure that I have gender neutral bathrooms. Even though I can go into the bath, my bathroom is spoken for. I get seen everywhere. Even though my pronoun is assumed correctly by 100% of the people I interact with, I'm still going to introduce myself and set meetings where we introduce people using their pronouns, even if everyone there is cisgendered, because I want to be a proactive ally in this.
You know, that's great. We talk about this on the show and from different angles from time to time. And in the hospitality industry, it's frequently pointed out that there's reaction as opposed to being proactive. Right. And because of the way the space works. So when we talk about issues, say, of sexual harassment and sexual assault, it's going on and might be being dealt with in 10 different cases in a situation, one restaurant on one night. And there's always a sort of like backfighting consideration. Mm-hmm. Is there kind of a similarity here in that way too? I mean, kind of bringing it to the hospitality and liquor industries. Is there a similarity to this, or is it kind of places are? I think everybody, there's going to be different situations everywhere, right? But is it a lot of just sort of reactionary stuff? And is it a lot of tolerance versus acceptance?
I think that it varies widely.
Okay, yeah.
I think that part of the reason that this seminar is so perfectly timed is that there is a large spectrum of the way that the industry is engaging with these issues that affect marginalized communities. And there's a desire for people to do well on it, and they're not certain exactly how.
Exactly.
That's a great
That's
way to
why,
put it.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. You know, this seminar is to educate. Our industry wants to be better. I have to believe that. You know, you always want to believe. You know, especially for me, when you're part of a marginalized community, you have to have hope and believe that, you know, the people that you're surrounded with, the people that you spend the most time with, that they want to be better for you. You know, and that's what brings change. So, you know, especially working within Bacardi and the Bacardi family, you know, I work with a wonderful group of people, and they're so supportive, and they've been supportive of this seminar, and they're excited to sit in on it. They're excited to sit on it because they don't know, you know, they don't, and especially, you know, it was so important to bring wit into this conversation because the trans community has the most mystery shrouded around it out of any other community. And so I wanted him to, you know, when I first asked him, I was like, will you share your story, you know, of your transition and how it is to live being perceived as a straight white man? Like, I wanted him to be as forthcoming and as comfortable as he was talking about his story, but it's really going to be an eye-opener for everyone in that room, because I think they're done with the tolerance. I think they're done with being, you know, reactive. Mm-hmm. I think we're in a time now, you know, in our community, that they're wanting to make that change. Like, they want to set the tone. They don't want to just accept things as they are, say, this is how it is, okay, then I have to accept. No, they want to create that new kind of atmosphere and have everyone be comfortable around it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way to put it. And yeah. So I think we're talking here from moving then from the tolerance to the acceptance. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, and then, like, that next step would be, let's turn you into an advocate. Like, you accept you want to do the right thing, but you're like, but I got blinders on, because I exist in a state of privilege, of,
right,
like, heterosexual or cisgendered privilege. And, like, that's okay. Acceptance is the first step.
Right, right. And that's a really good point. Hey, actually, let's take a break here.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back and talk a little more. How's that sound?
Cool. Super.
Good, great. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nolan Drink Show. Come on back.
Goodbye, Joe, I got to go, me oh my, oh. I gotta go, pull a B-roll, 9 to 5, oh. My advice is the sweetest one, me oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we're gonna have
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian D'Souza with you. Thanks for listening in. And as we often do here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, the time between the segments that you're hearing on the air are fascinating and longer than the segments themselves. And we were just having a great conversation, so this will just kind of continue from there. We will not leave you without context. Okay, fair enough. Christina, we were talking about something before we started the show regarding the seminar. And, you know, one of the things that – one of the goals of the seminar is to make a certain group of people uncomfortable. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So, I mean, I've just been kind of, you know, joking around, you know, New Orleans, you know, with all my colleagues about making straight people uncomfortable. Because it's true. You know, I think when you talk about, when you speak about real issues, I think when you speak about, you know, real life outside of food and cocktails, like things that affect people, it makes people uncomfortable. And it's supposed to. I mean, that's the only way you're going to bring change about is when, you know, when you get people really thinking outside of their comfort zone. I mean, that's what brings change. But at first, people don't really know how to react. And it's not so much because they don't, they're not agreeing with you. It's just for them, it's so foreign. It's because they don't have to experience it. So they can't really, sometimes they don't have the bandwidth to really understand.
Never thought about it.
They've never thought about it, you know. For instance, gender neutral restrooms. I'm going to talk about it a little bit in my seminar. Going to the restroom is one of the most mundane things you can do as a human being. We all do it.
What's that book,
Everybody
Poops?
Without even thinking about it, right? It is the most mundane thing. But I'm a very masculine-centered presenting woman. So sometimes when I have to go to a public restroom, it is a great source of anxiety if there's no gender-neutral restrooms. And that shouldn't be that should not be the case in 2019. You know, when I go into an establishment and they have gender-neutral restrooms, it speaks volumes on the owners of that establishment because mm-hmm. it shows consideration and respect for the clientele that's coming in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just to touch a little bit about that. You know, it's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow afternoon. It's going to be some hard-hitting stuff, but we're just going to be talking about our lives and our experiences. You know, we're just going to be talking about our coming out stories and, you know, how we have to navigate through this world. You know, like Whit being a trans man, being perceived as a straight white man, me, you know, for the most part, being a masculine center, you know, gender non-conforming woman, you know. I get called sir a lot, and this is the thing. I get called sir so many times, and people will realize it and just apologize profusely to me. They'll feel so bad, and for me, I'm like, it's okay. Like, it's okay. You know, it's also on us, too, you know, as part of the LGBTQ community, to be understanding that we have to educate and not, you know, to pick and choose our battles. You know, that's an important thing, too, is, you know, if someone calls me sir, it's because they're not trying to disrespect me. They just, like, looked from the head up. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, like, mm-hmm. looked at, it was a quick glance. And then when they realized, they're like, oh, I'm like, no, it's okay. So it's as much as it, on, you know, the straight community as it is on us. You know, it's all about working together mm-hmm. and understanding each other. And that's how we can move forward. Get that, you know, move that needle, as I always like to say.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is this a good, I mean, and I'm probably stating an obvious question here, but a great way to get people, because I think we talk about blind spots, right? We're talking about that a little bit, and people, things you maybe had thought you've never experienced, like you said, I've never met a trans person before. We were laughing about that. Now, telling your story, I'm assuming, is a very effective way to kind of start to break down that blind spot, maybe.
I've really found it to be. The weirdest thing happens when I am in a group of people and we're having a conversation and I end up disclosing my trans status, like kind of all the oxygen goes out of the conversation for any other topic. That becomes the whole thing. And it's highlighted for me how rare the experience is for cisgendered folks to have the opportunity to engage with a trans person and ask open questions, not violating questions, just tell me about what your day-to-day experience is like. Mm-hmm. How was it for you to like let people know that you were transitioning? Like, to have that conversation, I think, is an important opportunity for people to start to see a lived experience that they don't conceive of in their mm-hmm. day-to-day life.
But thank you. And I think it's an important point because I think we're making this distinction here that in a lot of cases, I mean, sure, we're dealing with people that are homophobic and these things and by choice, very deliberately, right? And then I think we're also dealing with people that it's just not like on the radar, never thought about it, never confronted it, never had to. And, you know, that's an important thing, I think, to discern. And I'm not making excuses for anything or anyone, but there are kind of two sets of situations here, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've found, you know, especially in our industry, I hate to say ignorance, but I mean, that's kind of the perfect word for it. It's not homophobic. It's not hateful. I mean, of course, there are people out there, of course, hands down, that are just straight up hateful. But, you know, within our industry, they just don't know because they've never experienced it. You know, they just don't understand. You know, the reason, you know, for me, it was really important when I was putting this panel together. You know, our rainbow, it's a spectrum. You know, there's so many different facets to the LGBTQ community. You know, when I first came out 25 years ago, it was just LGBT. You know, and a few years ago became LGBTQ. You know, and it's important for me to make sure to say it correctly. And I want to say it correctly because I am setting the tone. Mm-hmm. I'm setting the example. And, you know, that's... When I was putting my panel together, I was like, well, all right, so I'm, you know, masculine center, I'm a lesbian woman, all right, well, I have to have a gay guy, okay, cool, awesome. I was like, I need to have, you know, a trans man or woman, and I need to, you know, I want them to be able to feel comfortable. Like, for me, having Whit feel comfortable has been one of my main priorities, you know, in this whole process, because... his transition and what he's gone through has been harder than all of us, hands down. And I recognize that and I realize that. So, you know, every time I got on the phone with him, every time, you know, I sent an email to him, I always, you know, it was always the first thing I said is, what are you comfortable with? How can we do this where you can tell your story, but you feel comfortable and in a good place? And so, you know, putting this panel together, I tried to make it as diverse as possible within the constraints of what I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do appreciate what you said. And again, not to make something trivial here, but when you walked in here today, you first told me, it was almost reminding me of like you were doing the starting lineup. You know, I got Whit. He's my trans guy.
Yeah.
You know,
and now playing queer woman.
You
know, and that's the thing. Because I feel like, you know, we have to be proud. He's my trans guy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the charmingly boyish lesbian. Yeah. It all works, you know? You know, and so, yeah. And, you know, we have, you know, the cute, young, you know, gay guy, Alex Negranza. He's the baby of the group. I came out when he was 4. I'm going to give him a little trouble about it tomorrow at the seminar because, you know, he's... I'm going to mention it. He is the next generation, not mm-hmm. only for our community, mm-hmm. but for the industry. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of weight on his shoulders, but I'm also going to let him know that, you know, he has the support, but it's his generation. They're the ones that are going to make the real difference.
Right. We all push forward and hand the baton.
Well, as a generation, I always feel, you know, you always want to strive and work hard and make it better. So when you hand it over to the generation after you, it's better than what you walked into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do with this seminar.
Well said.
Yeah.
Let's do this, y'all. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more.
Yep.
Cool. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on, Matt.
Every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up. Driving me home once more. Now if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening in, friends, to the show this week. As always, once again, special thanks to our friends here at 2 Jags for hosting us here. 831 Decatur, 813, 831, one of those, something like that. And I'm pleased to be joined by my guests, Christina Cabrera and Whit Kathner. Thanks again, you two, for taking some time to be here.
Absolutely.
And having a blast having these conversations in between the sandwiches. We're like sipping on some cocktails and we're talking about all kinds of interesting and different varied things. I said this last segment too. So people like we're totally leaving people out to dry on this, like what we're talking about in between the segments. But it informs the conversation that we're having here. And one of the things that I wanted to ask y'all is sort of as an industry, because we've kind of been talking in sort of broader scope stuff, I think, in general, as an industry, speaking to hospitality and liquor and so on and so forth. You know, the representation of the LGBTQ community, I think it varies widely by place, of course. But what are some things that, how can industry address this in a meaningful way? And maybe can we even frame it in a way that, as to use what you were saying earlier, Whit, moves things from tolerance to acceptance?
I think that's a great question. I think that there are a number of steps, specifically around visibility. You know, when we talk about the role that this panel is going to play in TAILS, I think it really is about raising awareness and then raising visibility. So, one of the things we've touched upon is the idea of gender-neutral bathrooms. That's something that you can do that's not only going to be beneficial for your patrons, but it's going to be beneficial for your staff. And even for folks who don't necessarily need to take advantage of it, raises the question. It calls the question on the idea of having gendered bathrooms. But when it comes to building out your team, I think that it's really important that you're keeping an eye towards having a broad spectrum of lived experiences. And that goes to everything. It's not just about LGBTQ, but it's like, yeah, let's make sure we don't have an all-white staff.
Right.
Because I bet there are some things that we might miss as a table of white people trying to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that looking at what you are supporting on your menu and the brands that you bring into your bar, as a beverage director, as a bar manager, your cocktail menu is a choice. And who you decide to represent and give space to there speaks volumes about who you are and what is important to you. And so one of the things that I try to talk with buyers about, because I work for a distillery, is to think about not just, is the marketing and the PR department of this company focused on the right things and on activating all the right communities? Do people of color, do LGBTQ people, do marginalized communities have seats at the table at that company? Mm-hmm. Are they in a decision-making role? Are they given a budget to activate that community that you actually want to reach out to? Don't just put a cocktail on the menu that speaks to a specific community unless there's going to be something real behind it. So like every June we do a civic pride campaign. Our vodka's name is Civic Vodka. And for our Civic Pride campaign, we partner with bars and restaurants, and they feature a Civic Vodka cocktail on the menu and then donate a portion of proceeds, like 10% of that cocktail revenue, goes into a pool. At the end of the month, we then partner up with that bar. We donate a portion of our proceeds from every bottle we've sold that month. And we combine that and then give that to a local nonprofit. The one we worked with the past 2 years has been Trans Law, and they focus on supporting the trans community to be able to kind of shepherd them through the expensive and convoluted process of changing your gender marker and your name on government documentation. And so the first year we did this, we raised an entire year's budget for Trans Law. And in our second year doing it, we doubled the number of accounts that were participating. So we had about 62 accounts engaged in that this year. And it's the little bit of difference between a rainbow on the bottle and real commitment and investment in the issues that we're trying to draw attention to.
That's okay. Wow.
And I think Christina's in this position where she is able to drive programming and steer resources to the to bring space and light to these marginalized communities. And so she's able to use this opportunity with a massive brand to do real things. Not just like, cool, that bottle speaks to me, so I'm going to pick it up. It's like, no, we then created a space where people can get on social media, can engage with this brand, but then we can draw attention to queer people of color in New York. Like, of course. So that to me is that's the synergy of ways that brands, that bars and restaurants, and that patrons can be engaging to try to advocate for and advance these issues.
That's great, Whit. Chrissy, let me ask you this question. I want to flip the question just slightly here. So, Whit was largely speaking, obviously, to the industry thing. What can people who are our patrons then do? And I think some of this you could extrapolate from what he was saying, but, what can patrons do to do something meaningful when they go out and eat and drink and enjoy hospitality?
Like the people on the other side of the bar?
Yeah, the customers.
The customers, I mean, I think it's, something I'm going to bring up in the seminar, just to touch on is, inclusion is a lot more than, what Whit touched on, but it's also about, it's as simple as just asking you your preferred pronoun and not just assuming that the person across from you is a she or he. That goes a long way. It's small things like that. As clientele comes in, it's important. I touched on this with one of my other panelists, Alex Negranza, and he and I were talking about it, making sure, when we see we see a single woman come into a bar as a bartender. You want to make sure that that single woman feels comfortable, you know, when she's sitting by herself. You want it because, you know, a lot of sketchy people out there. And so, you know, as a bartender, you're always aware of her. Like, you'll, you know, you have eyes on her just to make sure she's comfortable. It's the same thing with LGBTQ. If I see two men walk in and they're obviously together, you know, I will also watch them and make sure that they're as comfortable as that single woman. And it's them, you know, it's with our culture becoming mainstream, you know, there is in bigger, more progressive cities, the integration of the straight and queer community. And so I think for, you know, the straight community coming into our bars, you know, going into gay bars, you know, being respectful and being aware that at the end of the day, these bars were our safe spaces and have been our safe spaces since the very beginning, you know, and being respectful of that and knowing that this is our home and you are welcome in it. And please come be in it. But be respectful of the fact that you are in a gay bar. And this is a place where, you know, we come to feel comfortable and where we come to be ourselves. And so if you're going to come and, you know, the bachelorettes are going to bring their parties, you know, or you're going to come see RuPaul's Drag Race, or, you know, you're going to come and be an ally and celebrate pride, you know, for instance, at the Stonewall, be aware of your surroundings and know what this means to us. And I think that's, you know, another way that, you know, on the other side of the aisle, that's how they can be more aware.
That's great.
I don't know if that answered your question.
No, I think it did. And maybe I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. We got about 2 minutes left, y'all, before we close out the radio portion of the show. But also, I think you said this earlier, Christina, being aware of the places that you're patronizing or the brands that you're supporting, right? And
absolutely.
Doing some of your homework. If this is something this is doing, if you're going to show concern, great. But do some homework and find out who gives money to whom and for what reason.
I think, like, especially in 2019, people are starting, like, the consumer is starting to realize that every dollar they spend is a vote.
Right.
Especially in a democracy that's increasingly controlled by finances. That, like, every time you spend a dollar, you are choosing to put that into someone's pocket, and then they're going to get to do things with it. And does that mean that, like, you're going to have more money go into building out opportunities for people of color and LGBTQ people? Or is it like, no, this money goes to Chick-fil-A and then it goes to anti-gay agenda issues, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think that...
You know, when you said, it's funny, I was going to mention Chick-fil-A. My sister, so I'm from Texas, and Chick-fil-A is huge there. And my baby sister, she just loves Chick-fil-A. It's one of her favorite spots. And I sent her an article about it, and she was really sad. She's like, but I love it. I'm like, yeah, but sis, I mean, you love me too, though, right? And yeah. She's like, yeah. And she, you know, it was a discussion. You know, these kinds of discussions, they... You know, people forget that I have to have these conversations with my own family members. You know, it's just not people that are coming into my bar, but, you know, it's being aware on that level and you know, supporting, you know, the establishments and organizations that support everyone.
Right.
And it's, right. it's, and those are like small things, but you know, in the end they matter, you know, that's in the end, if everyone is doing those small things, you know, it change is going to be apparent.
Awesome. Great. Do me a favor. We got about 1 minute left, y'all. Actually, less. Where do we quickly connect with the distillery?
You can follow us at Republic Restoratives on Instagram.
Okay.
That would be the best way. We keep that as updated as possible. Come and visit us out in D.C.
Awesome. And with Bacardi. I bet if you type that in, you'll just kind of find it on Google.
You'll find Christina Cabaret at Bacardi. No. If you can find, you can look on Instagram, look at Grey Goose. We try to update that as much as possible. I have a lot on my LGBT kind of pride events on there as well. And you can follow me as well. It's at CHRSTNCABRERA.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. You guys are going to stick around for another shot with Noel Drinks. So friends, we're going to sign off the portion of the radio show here. Remember, be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all.
Like this.
right, everybody. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks. Thanks for sticking around. Brian Diaz here with you as always. Thanks for listening into the show this week, friends. I do appreciate it. In just a second, we're going to bounce right back over to Two Jags and continue our conversation with Christina and Wit. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Nola Drinks, friends. Here we are at Two Jags, and we're chatting with Wit Kathner and Christina Cabrera. And we wanted to kind of bounce back in right here so we capture some of what we were talking about during the break, so we've been talking about a ton. And I think what was really interesting is you know, both of you working for the companies that you work for has kind of almost in a, I don't, accidental tourist sort of way, maybe is a way to put it, has created opportunities for you to not only talk about the brand and the company that you work for, but to bring some of these issues to the accounts and the people that you deal with. But as we are also saying, not really a playbook at this point.
No, absolutely not. You know, when I got hired with, you know, Grey Goose, you know, of course they give, you know, we have programming that we have to follow and advocacy and things that they want us to do. But for me, I wanted to create my own niche. You know, I wanted to make myself invaluable, so to speak. And I started looking toward the multicultural and, you know, LGBTQ community because I am part of both those communities. And so it felt, it was just a very natural progression for me. And, you know, during World Pride this past summer in New York City, I threw event after event after event. I mean, I did 8 events in 9 days. The entire week of Pride was all Grey Goose all week long. And everyone knew it. And from there, it just started to become this conversation that my bosses and their bosses started having and approaching me. And so, you know, right now we're trying to, you know, within, you know, the organization, we're trying to find our way. And they're leaning in on me and asking me all these questions. And for me, I'm just like, well, I think we should do this. And I'm just kind of, like you said, I'm just kind of going along with it. You know, I'm creating the playbook as I go along. Mm-hmm. There's no one for me to really look to because it really hasn't been done within the organization. I'm starting something. So I'm, you know, kind of wandering around in the dark a little bit. But I'm just going back to what I would appreciate in my community. If I was, you know, going into a bar and I saw Grey Goose and saw what they were doing, would I think it was genuine? Mm. Would it be genuine for me? And that's kind of where I go with it. If I think about something or I think about an event, I think about what I would appreciate as an LGBTQ, you know, person, and would it be genuine to me would they be loyal to us in the end? And that's how I create, you know, the events that I do.
That's great. I mean, that's the best way to do it, I would think. But what you were telling us an interesting story during the break about how, I'm assuming it's an account, had somebody in a situation similar to yours, and you were sort of, yeah, you bring in the bottle, but let's have a talk about other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for a small, for now, brand like ours, you know, doing education for staff is essential because that's the only way that we can differentiate ourselves from the, you know, the many craft brands that are out there. And it's the way that we can compete for share of mind with, you know, the folks who have $100 million to put into marketing every year. And so education is essential for us, but it started to happen more and more that because we lead with our values, we're outspoken, we're disruptive as a brand. I mean, everything about our identity as an LGBTQ-owned spirits brand makes us a little bit different, that the accounts that we work with reach out to us when they have these other needs. And so we had a situation where an account had a team member that was transitioning, and so they were changing their pronoun, and the staff wanted to be supportive, but they didn't know how. And you could feel like when I got in front of the room, they asked me to come in and speak for about 45 minutes about, yes, let's do a training, make sure people are educated about the spirits and about, you know, the programming we're doing, but tell us about the trans lived experience. Tell us about what it's like to make your bar and your place of employment a place that is not just tolerant and not just accepting, but a truly welcoming place for trans people. And so to share a little bit about my story and about some of what the day-to-day struggle is like to be a trans person, to be someone who's like, you know, the bathrooms may not reflect the way that you feel, or the bathrooms may reflect what people expect, and then you go in and you don't look the way that they expect you to look. And you know, that struggle. One of the questions I got at that staff training was like, okay, like, I'm totally on board. I want to be helpful. Sometimes we have this problem where, like, they're in a very progressive neighborhood. They're like, sometimes I have this problem where I walk up to a table and I say, all right, like, hey, ladies. And then I come around, like, chair number four, and I look and I'm like, oh, but they look like something else. And I'm like, well, number one, you know, not a thing, not an object. It's a person. So let's start there. But they're like, what do I say? What's like, how do I engage? And I was like, well, here's what I would say. Instead of guys, instead of ladies, like, I always use folks. Yep. Or everybody.
Everybody.
Like, just finding these small gender neutral ways that you can refer to people, that just says, like, it makes it welcoming. It broadens it up. I was having a debate with one of my cousins about a lot of these issues. And she was like, oh, it just feels like, you know, why is everybody being so sensitive? Why does everybody need to have their hand held and everything? Just like, oh, grow a pair. And I was like, actually, that sort of hits exactly on the sort of heteronormative misogyny that we're trying to combat, where it's like, yes, we live in a patriarchal society historically. Let's try to be part of the generations that change that.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, let's go with gender neutral pronouns when you're walking up to a table and you don't know. And now, you know, I'll go out to an account, and one of the most encouraging, exciting things I saw was on the bottom of their Square machine, their little card reader where you cash out, they had a little sign that said, please don't assume the pronouns of anybody who works here until they tell you what they are. Please refer to everyone as they, them, there. And I was like, you're out progressiving me. Yes. Like, show me a new way of thinking about things. And so even, like, I would say for myself, for folks who have been in the LGBTQ community for the last 30, 50, 60 years, we are constantly having to learn new things all the time. Folks using an X, like, okay, we need to have an even bigger tent. And so even I find myself challenged sometimes, being like, oh man, I'm behind the times. I'm using antiquated phrases. Got it. I actually need to introduce my pronouns all the time.
I just learned what Latin, what X
Latinx
means. Latinx. I was doing a pride event a couple weeks ago, and one of the guys created the flyer for our social media, and it said Latinx. And I was like, oh man, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, and he's like, well, because, you know, Latina and Latino, that's gender, you know, you're gender assuming, so Latinx just embodies it all. And I was like, huh. And I've been out for 25 years. I'm going to be 41 in a couple of weeks. And so even now, you know, I'm still being taught. Like, you know, I'm still like, whoa, what is that? Okay, now we're rolling with that?
Right.
Awesome. And I just jump right on board, you know, because I have to set the example, and I'm trying to set the example. But yeah, to what was saying, We do come from a very patriarchal, you know, society, and I think it's not sensitivity. It's not sensitivity to disrespect someone how they want to be identified.
Yeah.
It doesn't harm you. It's just you using a different word, you know, to associate with them, and it's not really that hard. It's just you changing your habits,
mm-hmm.
And I think I think within the industry, that's what we're trying to do. And tomorrow, I'm gonna talk a little bit about it. You know, when someone comes to your bar or sits at your table, never assume they're she or he.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just ask them if, you know, you build up a good rapport with them. By the way, how would you like to be, you know, what's your preferred pronoun?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like to, you know, identify? And they'll be like, oh my God, thank you. Yeah. And when that question gets asked to me, I love it. I'm like, oh, thank you so much. I'm she and her. So.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things, too, in thinking about the normativity of all this, and the shock that, like, the transitioning experience can have. So if you have someone in your life who is, you know, born in one body and wants to change that, because they identify as the other, or something in between. One of the great comparisons that got made at that same staff training was, they were like, well, look, if someone gets married, you know, I changed their last name. Like, cool, got it. Like, understood. No problem. The next day, I will never make that mistake. And if someone changes their pronoun or changes their name, like, we're asking for that same level of respect. Like, we just haven't built the muscle as a society yet that if someone says, hey, actually, no, my pronoun is this now, and I'm not going to go by Whitney anymore. I'm going to go by Whit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's have the respect and recognize our own position of privilege that we never have to fight that battle. Like, cool, everyone assumes immediately what my gender is, and they know the right name to address, and they never mess it up, and it never makes me feel socially isolated. Let's recognize that privilege and be like, cool, I never have to do that. The least I can do is try really, really hard to get this right. And if I get it wrong, acknowledge it.
Right.
Hey, I'm so sorry. I know that you're transitioning. I'm like really sorry. I just said she back there, and I know you're going by he now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just that. Acknowledges. It's this visibility. Like, recognize. I'm still human, and I messed it up, but I'm on your side.
Mm-hmm.
The effort is there, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And that's everything, is the effort that they're trying.
Yeah.
I appreciate you saying that. I think Christine and I, you and I were talking on the phone, and I was talking about a friend of ours that is a trans person here. And they are transitioning, and they is their preferred pronoun right now. And I know this is kind of a tangent, but from a we don't think about language very much, because language, when you speak your native tongue, and I've had the good fortune of being able to learn some other languages and study other languages and these things. Well, yeah, I struggle with English, so let's not go too far here. But, you know, and I find that, you know, you are so wired in your head when the part of your brain that is your primary language, you genderify, you know, as you do. And I find that, you know, because we just talk and we talk fluidly when we're having conversation typically, right? And I find that when we get to the they and them thing, I'm getting better at it, but I'm so not accustomed to it. It causes me to stop for a second.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, it's not natural.
But that's
it's not a natural kind of, like, it's grammatically, it's just not, kind, it doesn't flow. You know?
But if you do it, it will, yeah, right? And
just isn't what we got raised and told that we should
say
do.
They and them, they them and there.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, you know, moving to San Francisco, really, I came from Austin, Texas, and I moved to San Francisco when I was 28, and you know, it took me a little bit to really get the hang of it, because it doesn't just flow like you said, you know. But when I moved to San Francisco, I became, you know, more aware. And, you know, more respectful, because people started asking me how I identify. So I wanted, you know, I'm like, well, I'm part of this community. I need to do right by them, you know. Mm. So the they, them, and there, you know, now it's something very natural for me. It's like second nature. Mm-hmm. But it did. It took a little bit to kind of get that muscle memory. And
exactly.
It's all right. About muscle right. Memory.
Yep.
But, you know, it shows, you know, when you – it speaks volumes. You know, to the person that you're referring to, when you can show that respect to them, you know, it validates a little bit of who they are for themselves, and I think people don't realize that. You know, there's something that, you know, and please stop me if I'm, you know, speaking out of turn,
because
I don't want to, you know, but I think for me, when you know you're talking, when I'm especially talking to a trans person or someone that's transitioning. You know, I can't even imagine the struggle that they're going through. And so if I can do my part, you know, to validate them just a little bit in a little way by having a conversation and just saying, you know, just saying them, they are there, then I'm going to do that because it's the least I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel.
Yeah. And I think I'm kind of working on this theory right now that I think resistance to the trans community, like people's knee-jerk response being like, oh my God, that's like so unnatural, or that's so wrong, or like, why do you need this special treatment? I think that in some cases it's a result of ignorance, never having had, like, or not being aware that you're having a conversation with a trans person. But I think the other side is not having your own needs seen, validated, and met. And that can show up in lots of ways. Like, if you feel like someone's being a special snowflake, my first question is like, where are your emotional needs like not being met? Like, where are your emotions and your lived experience? Where is that not being validated? Because it's clear that you're like, you're at a place where you're like, no, why should you be seen? And it's because like some part of you is not feeling seen. Mm-hmm. So let's work through that. And then, because I just feel like people are not trying actively in most cases to oppress other communities, but they're like, well, dude, I'm not getting taken care of. Like, I'm having trouble making ends meet. Like, I feel uncomfortable in certain situations. I, as like a woman walking down the street, have had my ass grabbed or been catcalled, and like, no one cared about that. So why should I bend over backwards to make you feel comfortable with the use of this weird pronoun? And it's like, cool, actually, we're all in the same struggle together. We're all working on the same issue.
You know, Marsha P. Johnson said, Marsha P. Johnson was one of our great, you know, I'm going to touch on it tomorrow, but every civil rights movement has their great leaders, every civil rights movement. And two of ours are Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. They were trans women that were actually at the Stonewall riots. And until their deaths, not only did they fight for equal rights, but they fought for trans rights. One of Marsha's famous lines is, When is everyone gonna realize that we're all human beings together in this rat race?
Mm.
And it's just so simply put, and it's just so simple to understand, but you know, and she said this back in 1992, you know, before her death. And so, yeah, I mean, it just seems like such a simple thing, you know, and I think within our industry, making, you know, those little adjustments. And then, like I said before, I think our industry wants to be better. You know, there's people within it that want to do right, you know, by the marginalized communities, and they want this, you know. Sometimes I have a problem with, you know, certain people saying how inclusive and how diverse our industry has become, because it's usually, in my experience, the people who aren't part of those marginalized communities that are the first to say it. You know, so stop saying it. You don't have to say it. We'll get there, and we are getting there. Like, everyone's like, "Whoa, this is the first queer seminar in Tales history," but this is the 15th year of Tales. I'm like,
17th.
Yes, 17th. Holy, all right, cool. 17 out of 17 years.
The math got worse.
Whoa. It's made me a little sadder. It's cool, but yeah,
we're here now. Okay,
we're here.
We're gonna make up for it.
But you know, I was. You know, it's happening now. Yeah, it should have happened sooner, but it's happening now. You know, it's happening now, and we are starting a conversation. We are starting one of many conversations that are about to be had. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the inaugural conversation. This is the one that's going to start many more. Next year, who knows, there might be two or three seminars, you know, on different, like, pronouns, you know, and different things like that. And maybe next year we'll be able to actually break it down a little bit more. Mm-hmm. and after that and, you know, and keep moving, but you got to start somewhere.
Great. Well put. Thank you very much. And any last thoughts, anything that y'all want to add before we go drink Pisco? Let's go drink Pisco.
Or Grey Goose vodka.
Yeah, we're not going to bring up the Chilean Peruvian Pisco. Yes. Debate. We were talking about that before.
Or we could have a Bacardi and Coke. So.
Brand plug.
That seems right.
Brand
plug. Right. Well, I actually just want to thank Christina for all of the work that she's done to lead this panel, to so thoughtfully orchestrate it, pull it together, and create a sense of community and investment on behalf of all the panelists. And like, you really made the case that this needed to exist at Tales. And so I want to thank you for your leadership in this. And I'm just honored to be included. And I'm pumped that you reached out to us to make this conversation happen, because I think that we are at the right place, you know, right on time, if not a minute too soon. So, yeah.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. So thank you. Thank you both very much. Did you want anything, Christina, before?
No, I mean, thank you for the kind words, Whit. It's been very overwhelming these past couple of months. People have been reaching out to me from the community and sending me emails and text messages, you know, especially during Pride. And it's been very, it's been wonderful. I've not really known how to, like, you know, take it all in. I wasn't trying to be a voice for our community. I was just trying to do what was right and what was needed. And I finally now have the resources and platform to do so. So, you know, bringing, you know, Whit together with the amazing panel that I have and people like you, Brian, that are taking interest and giving us the space and the time to, you know, be heard. I mean, that's where it starts with, you know, mm-hmm. advocates like you. So thank you for having us.
It's my pleasure. As you were saying, it's the least I can do. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. It's been a pleasure meeting you both in person, by the way.
Likewise.
And the sidebar conversation.
We've had some good laughs.
We've had some great laughs. So let's thank you. Absolutely. A couple things. You know, let's do this again next year.
Sure.
And then let's just, you know, have a couple drinks together and just talk about that.
I think we're going to be ready for a shot come 2 p.m. tomorrow. So
okay, cool.
If you want to meet us at the Sinesta, please do.
I'll say
perfect timing.
Yes. Thank you very much, friends. I really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, Brian.
Hey, my pleasure. We're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week, friends. I do appreciate it, as always. A little bit of a programming note here for you. Next week's show, our sustainability series rolls on, but it will mark the end of our Tales of the Cocktail 2019 coverage. Friends, last show we recorded there in July. This time around, we're going to be talking health and wellness in the hospitality industry, certainly a topic that we've talked about before and will continue to do so. But on this show, we're going to be joined by folks connected to the very fine nonprofit organization Healthy Hospo. They provide training and resources to individuals and businesses in the hospitality and liquor industries that want to address health and wellness. A good bunch of people, good organization. I hope you tune in for that one. Friends, this is our parting shot.
I do hope you enjoyed this week's show, but more importantly, I hope that it made you think and you got something constructive from it. Now, two of the key ideas that we touched on this week are the ideas of blind spots and being uncomfortable. We all have blind spots, friends. I'd actually ask you to harken back to the show that we did on July 22nd, originally aired on that date. You can find it at noladrinks.com. It was a show on inclusivity. And one of our guests, Jackie Summers, pointed out, we all, no matter who we are, have blind spots. I take that to mean we're all works in progress, right? But I will say this, that those of us in a place of privilege, more often than not, probably tend to have more blind spots than others. I think that's a pretty accurate depiction of the situation. Now, one of the things that Christina pointed out on this show is that being uncomfortable, being outside your comfort zone, facing your blind spots, this is when change has the possibility of occurring. But one of the things that can happen when we face a blind spot is it can make us defensive. I think it's a natural reaction for most of us most of the time. Now, I'm only going to speak for myself here. I know that very often when a blind spot is illustrated to me, when I encounter one, of which I have many and will encounter many more, I feel failure and I can feel defensive from that failure. I'm guessing in my case, again, only speaking for me, it probably comes from two places. One, I think it comes from a place of arrogance. I don't like to fail. I don't like to feel like I let people down. I don't like the idea that I wasn't aware of a blind spot in the first place. I think the other place that it probably comes from, hopefully is where it comes from, is that I want to be a better human. Now, these two things, at least in my case, are probably not mutually exclusive. Maybe that arrogance drives this a little bit of wanting to be a better human. Who knows? But I do know this. I know that it makes me uncomfortable and I don't like to fail. But facing failure is how we learn. Now, if you listen to this show on a regular basis, you know that I'm a sports guy. I say that from time to time. And one of the things often said in the world of sports and in other areas of life is we learn more from our failures than from our successes. And I think that's true. And I think when we talk about blind spots, in a sense, it represents a failure, meaning that up until this point in our lives, we have failed to recognize it. However, it also presents an opportunity to learn from that failure. Now, does having a blind spot make you a bad person? No, not by definition, I would argue. Sort of what we were talking about before when Jackie said on the show a couple weeks ago, we all have blind spots. We're all works in progress. It is what we choose to do when we encounter them, I think, that defines us in so many ways and makes us who we are. Action speaks louder than words, as the cliche goes. But it's only cliche because it works, right? Now, I think there are two really bad ways that we can fail, if I'll use that word again, I will, when it comes to dealing with blind spots. One is an individual can pretend that they have no blind spots or act as if they have no blind spots in their life. And I would equate this to coming from a place that's frankly just a self-righteous attitude where you chalk up what is different from you as just automatically being wrong. This is staying inside your comfort zone, right? Or refusing to step outside and face something that makes you uncomfortable. I think this is wrong. I think this is dangerous. That's one. Two is when we encounter a blind spot in ourselves, when we turn away from the discomfort and we choose to leave the blinders on. And this is also dangerous. Silence is enabling. Tacit compliance in this regard, enabling those that are pursuing racism, sexism, discrimination against the LGBTQ community, and other related concepts. That second one can be so dangerous as well because we are continuing to allow that to happen. Now, friends, as I've said a couple times already, we all have blind spots. We're all works in progress. This person right here included. I will have many more that I encounter moving forward in life. I am sure of it. It's how we deal with those blind spots, as I said, that really matters here in this instance. It's how we face the failure of having not recognized them in our lives up until this point and learning from them and being uncomfortable by them, but taking that discomfort and turning it into a positive. This is how we become better people, I think. This is how we make the world a better place for all of us on it. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.